what's going down. This is Grand Finale, co-host of the Drive Time Radio Show, and you are listening to WGXC Agra, 90.7 FM and WGXC.org.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network.
You've tuned in to All Together Now, WGXC's regional look at the news from Hudson Valley and the Capital Region, from the Catskills to the Berkshires and beyond. I'm Tom Rowe, and today you'll hear all sorts of local news updates, weather, interviews, and more, plus community events and the song of the day on All Together Now.
This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the news. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Hilo Catskill, cafe, bar, art gallery, and performance space located at 365 Main Street, Catskill, New York. Waveform's WGXC is pleased to broadcast live from Hilo every Tuesday morning starting at 9 a.m. In addition, Hilo live events are streamed and broadcast in conjunction with the Waveform Radio Transmit Partner Program.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Pat Lanan of Hillsdale, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here.
Sarah Tapton and Amanda Purcell are reporting for Columbia Green Media. Columbia and Greene counties are among 15 counties in New York to receive national funding for participation in an opioid study. The goal of the study, funded by the National Institutes of Health, is to reduce opioid-related deaths by 40% over 3 years. The School of Social Work at Columbia University will work alongside the 15 counties to reduce opioid use, increase medication-based treatment, increase treatment retention beyond 6 months, provide recovery services, and expand distribution of naloxone. The Greene County Legislature last week approved a resolution authorizing the agreement between the Greene County Community Services Board and Columbia University. The Columbia County Board of Supervisors is expected to vote on a similar resolution November 13th. Board Chairman Matt Murrell said counties qualified for the funding as being the top counties for opioid death in the state. Not a distinction the county is proud of, but officials are grateful for the funds to help solve the problem, Murrell added. Columbia Greene Addiction and Recovery Coordinator Danielle Hotling said, in Greene County, mortalities from opioid overdoses have increased, and I quote, since 2010, from 8.1 per 100,000 to 23.1 per 100,000 in 2017. That is a significant increase, end quote. And Hotling said, so far this year, Greene County has had about twice as many overdoses as Columbia County. And you can read the full story at HudsonValley360.com.
The early cold snap has some ski resorts busy locally, with Hunter Mountain opening November 15th. Crews there are busy putting down artificial snow. Catamount Ski in Columbia County has not updated its website since spring and seems caught off guard by the cold. That's also true of Windham Mountain, which is not making snow yet because they are still finishing an autumn construction project. Quote, "We took on major snowmaking projects this summer, including automation on the West Peak, a new booster pump on the East Peak, and replacing over 10,000 feet of air and water pipe across the mountain. It has proved difficult to wrap up these projects and also actively make snow, so we have focused our efforts on finishing as many of these projects as we can over the last several days. We knew it was a risk to take on these projects, the risk being that it would get this cold this early in the seasons, and it did. The reward will be more efficient, improved system for this winter," unquote, says a message on the Windham Mountain website.
Chris McKenna is reporting for The Fray. The absentee count in the very tight Ulster County District Attorney race will commence Monday, November 18th. County election officials have approximately 2,800 absentee and affidavit ballots to tally. The contestants in the race to succeed retiring District Attorney Holly Conright are Democrat Dave Clegg and Republican Michael Kavanaugh. The count on election night put Kavanaugh in the lead by only 3 votes. As of November 12, 2,275 of nearly 3,700 absentee ballots issued to Ulster County voters had been returned and reviewed by Tom Turco, the county's Republican Election Commissioner, and Democrat Election Commissioner Ashley Dittus. An additional 142 absentee ballots have yet to be viewed by Dittus. The county also has 428 affidavit votes that have not been inspected yet. Turco said the counting of absentee and affidavit ballots will start at 10 a.m. on Monday and could take at least 2 weeks to complete. And you can read the full story at The Fray.
Kayla Harris reports for Capital Confidential that property values increased in Columbia County by more than 10% over the past 2 years. Only 3 other counties in the state, Erie, Oswego, and Nassau, had more than 10% growth in property value over the past 2 years. Overall, property taxes, excluding New York City, are up 2.4% from 2018 in New York State, the largest one-year change since 2014. In this year's state budget, New York permanently implemented a property tax cap that generally restricts levy increases to 2%. Read more about this story at Capital Confidential.
Columbia County Media is reporting the Hendrick Hudson chapter of the Daughters of the American Revolution has announced it will present Hudson resident Carol Osterink with its Community Service Award. The DAR presents its Community Service Awards on the local, state, and national levels to individuals and groups who have, and I quote, contributed to their communities in an outstanding, voluntary, heroic, civil, and benevolent manner, and who have participated in or organized community activities, end quote. Osterlink is a native of Michigan and has lived in Hudson since the early 1990s. She is a former city alderperson and now maintains the Gossip of Rivertown blog. Osterink will be presented her award at a ceremony to be held at the Robert Jenkins House on Warren Street in Hudson, Saturday, November 18th. And you can read the full press release at HudsonValley360.com.
Bethany Bump reports in the Times Union that a ban on the sale of flavored tobacco products failed by 2 votes in the Albany County Legislature on November 12th. The legislature voted 18-17 for the ban, with 1 abstention and several absences. In September, New York used emergency regulations for a temporary ban on flavored e-cigarette products, but a court granted a temporary restraining order delaying the ban until a lower court considers a legal challenge seeking to overturn the law. On November 13th, another New York law went into effect, raising the minimum age to buy tobacco and electronic cigarettes to 21 years old from 18. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
Rick Carlin is reporting for the Times Union. U.S. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand has announced she will put forward legislation to benefit perfluorinated alkylated substances, or PFAS, under the purview of the Federal Clean Water Act. PFAS include compounds such as PFOA. Discovery of PFOA in the drinking water supply in Hoosick Falls 3 years ago led to a crisis that authorities are still working to clean up. Toxic substances have been linked to thyroid illnesses as well as cancers and immune disorders. The Trump administration's Environmental Protection Agency will decide by year's end whether to propose regulatory standards for how much PFAS should be allowed in drinking water. Gillibrand's bill would require the EPA to review the sources of PFAS in waterways and set limits on the amount that can be released. She also supports bipartisan legislation that would require the EPA to set up a process for adding PFAS to its toxic release inventory. The inventory is a central database showing which chemicals are being released and where. And you can read the full story in the Times Union.
New York's hunting season begins at sunrise, 6:47 a.m. November 16th for deer and black bear. Hunting continues in the southern zone through December 8th. Crossbow season ends locally on November 15th. Hunters should go to the DEC website to make sure their licenses are up to date and they are following all the rules.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Thursday, mostly cloudy with a high near 37 degrees. Thursday night, mostly cloudy with a low of around 25. And on Friday, mostly sunny with a high near 46 degrees. Friday night, partly cloudy with a low of around 20 degrees. And that's your weather update from WGXC, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties. Get a local event mentioned on All Together Now. Go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page. And copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
On Thursday, November 14th, the opening reception for Through Our Lens photographic exhibit by the members of the Columbia County Photo Club will be at the Hudson Area Library at 6 p.m. Exhibition continues through December 19th. JMOT, Just a Matter of Time, the musical, is a romp through a fantasy world that may be more real than anyone could imagine at the Bridge Street Theater in Catskill at 7:30 p.m. Kurt Henschlager's galactic premiere of the audiovisual performance Echo will be performed in the splendid void of total darkness at MPEC Concert Hall on 8th Street in Troy at 7:30 p.m. On Friday, November 15th, join the Avalon Lounge in Catskill for our second annual Grand Slam. This special show will feature a lineup of some of our favorite storytellers from this past year's on-the-fly story slams at Hilo Catskill, as well as a special guest panel of local judges who will be crowning our Grand Slam winner at 6 p.m. An evening with Grammy Award winner Mike Block, voice and cello, features a mix of original compositions, songs, arrangements of traditional folk music, and classical selections at Medeby Farm in Hillsdale at 7 p.m. Moon Duo, Garcia Peoples, Jeffrey Alexander, and the Heavy Litters all perform at BSP Kingston on Wall Street at 8 p.m. JMOT, Just a Matter of Time, the musical, is a romp through a fantasy world that may be more real than anyone could imagine at the Bridge Street Theater in Catskill at 7:30 p.m. on Saturday, November 16th.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here.
Sarah Tapton and Amanda Purcell are reporting for Columbia Green Media. Columbia and Green counties are among 15 counties in New York to receive national funding for participation in an opioid study. The goal of the study, funded by the National Institutes of Health, is to reduce opioid-related deaths by 40% over 3 years. The School of Social Work at Columbia University will work alongside the 15 counties to reduce opioid use, increase medication-based treatment, increase treatment retention beyond 6 months, provide recovery services, and expand distribution of naloxone. The Greene County Legislature last week approved a resolution authorizing the agreement between the Greene County Community Services Board and Columbia University. The Columbia County Board of Supervisors is expected to vote on a similar resolution.
Hi, I'm Brianna from Colony. You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés, if you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street, you belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m. You can find us on the web at firstpreshudson.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Sheena Salvino of Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson.
I'm Fahim. I am 15 years old, and I'm also from Hudson.
I'm Elena, and I go to school at MC Smith Middle School.
My name's Amelia, and I'm a student at Hudson High School. I'm also from Hudson.
And we're here every week talking about books.
Books we love.
Books we hate.
And books that are just meh.
Bookish things.
All that good stuff. And we're glad there's so many people here today.
Yeah, we've got a full house.
Yeah.
Fahim is back.
Yeah.
Welcome back, Fahim.
Thank you.
So, since Fahim's back, I haven't heard from him in a while.
Yeah.
I'm wondering what you've been reading lately.
Well, in our ELA class, we had to read a book about, it's like an African-American book. It's called, like, A Lesson Before Dying by Ernest Gaines. So it's, like, about an African-American during, like, the Civil Rights era when, like, you know, nothing was equal and everything. An African-American was accused. Like, he was, like, in a store. And then he got accused for, like, just being there because, like, there a person died. And, like, so there was, like, a shootout in the store, and then everyone died, and then like he was the only one alive, so everyone thought he did it, cause like he decided to like get the cash and everything from the cash register, cause he thought everyone died, so what's the point? And then later on, like people accused him, and then he was sentenced to death, because like his lawyer really didn't like him and stuff, so he also told the court that he deserves to die, even though that's his lawyer, because he killed 4 people, even though. Like, you know, that's his lawyer. He was supposed to be, like, unbiased against him. And, like, his friend, his other friend, decided to make a novel, like, in, like, his notebook. And then, like, later on, the author, Ernest Gaines, he found the notebook of their, like, story and everything. He wrote the story about him.
It sounds similar to Kill a Mockingbird in matters of, like, theme and, like, content.
Yeah.
Which is what I read last year for ELA, too, so.
Hmm. Have you finished reading it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, it was all right, yeah.
It was all right?
Yeah.
I've never read anything by Gaines before, and I just was reminded of that recently because he passed away just this past month. So I'll have to catch up and read that. You all read all these classics that I've never read before.
Yeah.
I still have to read Old Man on the Sea. That's on my list.
Yeah, that's a boring book.
I mean, you don't have to really don't want to put yourself through that.
Yeah.
But
I think out of commitment to Bound by Books, I have to at some point. Have you read anything for fun this year?
No, not yet.
Not yet?
Yeah.
That's tough.
Yeah.
How about you, Lena? What have you been reading lately?
Well, we finally get to read a class book because usually all we do is math. And we got to read a book that's about Native Americans' Eagle Song.
Hmm.
So it's about this boy whose name is Danny. And he lives in Brooklyn, and he's always being bullied, but the first line in the book is, "Hey, Chief, are you going to your teepee?" And I was like, what? They live in longhouses. So, like, it's about this boy who lives in Brooklyn, like I said, and he is just being bullied for, like, just being Native American, and, like, in chapter 2, his dad finally comes back because he's usually just working to build this bridge. And so he's only going to be there for 1 week. And he really misses his dad. So he asks his dad, just because he likes his dad's voice. He said, "Hey, Dad, why are, like, the woman the boss of the family?" Wait, no, not that. He said, "Why do I come from Mom's tribe and not yours?" And he said, "Oh, you don't come from my tribe because the women are the people who choose the chief for the Native Americans, and they're the boss of the household mostly." And his dad likes to make jokes, and he said that they're much wiser than the men. And I'm like, okay. And there was a part that disturbed me that I had to read because I wanted to be Danny. And he said, "I don't like the kids at school. I just wish I could kill them." And that actually really disturbed me.
That's, you're reading, you're at the age in the books where you, like, read for certain parts, right?
Yeah.
I had to do that for, the only time we do that in high school now is when we're reading Shakespeare. And the first year when we did Romeo and Juliet, we didn't even get to do that.
Hmm.
But the year we read Othello, I felt just an obligation to be Amelia because the name was spelled exactly the same as mine. And I was like, yep, this was made for me.
Yay.
Yeah. And so far, I like the book because the dad is really funny and it's very interesting.
What's it called again?
It's called Eagle Song.
Eagle Song. Cool.
The book I read about Native Americans, I'm wrong. This wasn't about Native Americans. I don't think so anyway. Was Touching Spirit Bear about Native American tradition at least somewhat?
I think it touches on Native American traditions, but I think it's about white people.
It is. It's about
going
this,
to camp or something.
It's
or
about
to,
this
like...
white boy who gets sent to an island because he ends up beating up another kid, and he's in juvie for this. And they're like, "This is your last chance before you go to like actual adult prison because the kid he beat up like almost died. So you have to go to this island and you have to live here and you have to like learn to respect nature." And it was really weird. Even when I was reading it when I was younger, it was really weird. And I think it got like two sequels. But I remember distinctly this one scene where they're trying to teach him this lesson. They're like, "Look at this cake. And then look at all these ingredients. Now eat all these ingredients that go into the cake. And it doesn't taste good because it's not cake. But then when it's all together, it's a cake." And I don't remember the lesson they were trying to teach him. And I don't think it even made sense to me. But what I remember from that book is that cake scene. And making a longhouse eventually at one point in that class. Maybe not for that book. But I remember making a longhouse project with hot glue and like sticks in that class. Mm-hmm. And maybe because those are the only two things I can remember from that grade, maybe that's why I think Touching Spirit Bear was about Native American tradition, but I think I'm wrong.
I think it incorporates Native American traditions, like the place that he goes. I don't know if it's a camp or I don't know what they call it in the book.
It's
but the
literally
place he goes.
An island. It is literally an island. He has to make his own shelter, and then I think he almost gets mauled by the bear at one point.
Yeah, so I think the program that he's a part of in some way incorporates Native American traditions, but I don't know if there's actual Native American characters in the book.
I don't remember if the...
But the author's
I know
Native
he has
American.
Like two guides that come to give him supplies every like couple weeks. And that's who finds him after he gets mauled by the spirit bear, but like...
Does not sound pleasant, getting mauled.
This is like a whole portion of the book of him just like getting wrecked by this bear.
It's a little different than Lena's book.
But yeah.
No bear maulings.
This whole book was weird, and I don't know why I didn't think it was so weird when I was actually reading it in school. I think it got two sequels, and it really was just literally about this white grizzly bear, which... They called the spirit bear because I don't remember if it was albino or if it was just a genetic thing that made it white. I don't know if they go into it.
Or if it was a ghost.
Yeah. That's what I thought it was about when I first started reading this book, which is why I was excited and then I was very disappointed.
Well, what are you reading now?
We just finished The Handmaid's Tale in class. Now we're reading The Book Thief by Marcus Zusak.
I loved that book.
Which we're all like immediately like really invested in because the narrator is death, the personification of death.
Oh my God.
Which is awesome. And he's actually kind of the best. Like, I don't know how Marcus Zusak makes every single sentence sound perfect, but in my own ELA teacher's words, the way he writes death's narration, like, you want to date death in this book. That's the vibe you get from this book.
That's pretty
and
cool.
And we all agree. But yeah, it's very good so far. I'm only at page 141. I really want to read ahead, but technically shouldn't because then we might forget important stuff that we need to talk about in class.
Or you might give something away.
Yeah, we have to talk about it in class, and then that makes it all difficult because these past couple weeks when we were reading The Handmaid's Tale, like I think three people, which is half of our class, three people went ahead and we were all freaking out because we were all at different points in the book. And at this point, the teacher's like, "Okay, listen, I never thought I'd tell you guys to stop reading, but you need to kind of like stay on the same level as the rest of the class." Mm-hmm.
What's the Book Thief about?
It's about this young girl named Liesel in the era of Nazi Germany. She's a German girl, and she ends up living with this foster family. And she loves to read. That's one of her main character traits, is that she loves to read. She wants to learn to read. Her foster father teaches her how to read. And she starts stealing books from Nazi book burnings and, like, reading them at home, which is kind of, like, very illegal in Nazi Germany. Mm-hmm. But
how is that illegal?
It's illegal because in Nazi Germany, that's Hitler's reign. These books were supposedly full of propaganda or ideas that people listening to this can't see that I'm putting like air quotes over some words, and I don't know why I'm doing it. It was illegal during that era because these books were full of ideas from foreign countries and propaganda and possibly, you know, free thought, which Hitler didn't really want the nation to have at the moment because it was a Nazi regime. Mm-hmm. But yeah, she starts stealing books from book burnings, and she's stolen two books so far. She's stolen The Gravedigger's Handbook, And then she stole something called the shoulder shrug and started reading them undercover. And things get more complicated when I think her family eventually starts hiding a Jewish man in their basement, hiding him from the Nazis. Mm-hmm. And I haven't gotten to that part yet, but that part's actually in the description of the book on the back. Yeah. So, yeah, that's going to happen eventually. But I really love it so far. It's really nice. Death is awesome as a character. Boy. I don't know why. He's just the best.
I loved that book as well.
But yeah, I actually went to Barnes & Noble 2 days ago. And going back to The Handmaid's Tale, I found, because the new book just came out, The Testaments.
Yeah.
As a sequel, which I think is from the perspective of Aunt Lydia, who is like one of the head honchos of the Red Center in The Handmaid's Tale. And I haven't read The Testaments yet, but I did find a whole setup in Barnes & Noble dedicated to The Handmaid's Tale because of the new book coming out, because it's all popular. And I found a version of The Handmaid's Tale written like a Bible, like with the two columns and the ribbon. And my mom wanted to get that. But I also found a graphic novel, which I bought, and which is very beautifully illustrated and pretty graphic, but like in a good way. It's like very well illustrated and very beautiful at some points, which is really cool. And it remains very faithful to the book, unlike the TV show. But I'm going to bring that into class tomorrow and show my teacher, because I think she would think that was cool.
Yeah, I think I should read the graphic novel. I borrowed it from the library when it first came out, but then just wasn't in the right reading mood for a book that was that intense and dark.
Yeah.
So I returned it. But at some point I want to read The Testaments, but I read The Handmaid's Tale so long ago that I feel like I need a refresher. So I thought the graphic novel might be a good way to get caught up and have my memory refreshed. Because I do watch the TV show.
Yeah.
So I also don't want to be confused on what happened plot-wise in the book world.
She has a real name in the TV show, I think. Isn't her name June or something like that? And then she ends up having a baby, I think, in the TV show too, which is completely different from the book. The book is like pretty open-ended, actually, at the end of it. It's very strange.
Love open endings.
Yeah. I didn't like this one.
You like some closure?
Yeah.
Yeah. Handmaid's Tale offers no closure.
I don't mind a little closure, but I like having some, like, what happens next aspect in a book.
Yeah.
Like, where you want more, but it feels complete enough that you don't need to read more. Does that make sense?
What's an open ending?
An open ending would be a story where I feel like some books just kind of end on in a way that's very closed. Like, everything's resolved. You know what sort of the character's outlook is moving forward, or what their life's going to be like moving forward. Or they're dead and their life is over. But it's very like, this is the end. It almost has the words, the end.
Yeah. On it.
And then an open ending would be where you're like, I wonder what's going to happen next
and
with
it
these characters.
To be continued or something.
I hate this because the only example I can think of as an open ending is the Venom movie that came out 2 years ago in 2018. Which still hasn't gotten a sequel, and I'm really upset about it, because I'm one of the few people who really liked that movie.
Wait, the live action one?
I can't even use, like, a Marvel movie as an example, because Disney has pretty much done everything. Disney owns the world, so there's really no open endings at the end of that. There was no after credit scene after, like,
I don't love cliffhangers.
I don't either.
I will say that.
I don't. Especially if,
I want
like,
a little
no,
more closure than
especially
that.
Especially if there's, like, no guarantee that it's going to continue. I can't stand cliffhangers. I feel like cliffhangers and open endings are very different things, but similar things.
Yes. Well, like there's a book that I love called The Knife of Never Letting Go by Patrick Ness. And I loved that book so much. And then it got to the end and there was a huge cliffhanger.
Oh,
and
no.
there are second and third books, but I wasn't ready at that moment to dive into the second one.
Yeah.
And it sort of ruined the momentum.
Yeah, like, the end of The Young of Leeds had a perfectly closed ending, and yet somehow I still wasn't happy with that, because I was like, oh my god, it's over. What am I going to do now? I loved those books. They were so good.
Mm-hmm. I have a book to talk about, too.
Ooh,
that's very different
than... This was a TV show, wasn't it?
Yeah, I watched
it is
that
now.
One.
So I have the latest graphic novel in the Hilda series. So this one's called Hilda and the Mountain King. It's by Luke Pearson. And it is a Netflix series now, but it was originally a comic series. And they're very large comics. My co-hosts can see how large it is. And it's a really fun series. I've seen some of the Netflix series too, and it basically tells the same stories as the comics. And I think it's more like the comics I can enjoy as an adult reading them. I think the TV series is more interesting if you're a kid. But I think it's, you know, it's the same story, so they're fun. But the Hilda series is about a young girl named Hilda who is quite an adventurer. She likes to go around and explore and discover new things and meet creatures. And she has all these friends that are like different animals and creatures. And when the series starts off, she and her mom live together out sort of in the country. And they're in an area that where there's lots of trolls and other creatures. And the trolls are often believed to be very dangerous, and sometimes I guess they are, but as with any creature, they're not always. And eventually in the series, she and her mom end up moving to the city of Trollberg and making a life there. And Trollberg is protected from the trolls by a huge wall. And in this series, it follows up from the last one, which I think was called Hilda and the Stone Forest, in which her mom actually goes out on an adventure with her. And at the start of this book, it's a little spoiler for that last book, but it's not too much of one, but Hilda has become a troll, and there's a changeling troll that has taken her place as her mom's baby. But her mom knows it's not Hilda, but they sort of have swapped. So the troll mom made Hilda the troll because she thought her troll baby would have a better life in Trollberg with Hilda's mom. So Hilda's trying to figure out how to get back to her mom and how to not be a troll anymore. Meanwhile, her mom is trying to raise this little troll baby. Yeah. And there's lots of fun adventure involved.
It's two books now where I've like experienced like a little changeling story.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
That's really fun. I love this series. I would read any of them. There are also some fiction books that are not graphic novels. They do have illustrations in them, but they're not comics, and I'm not as interested in reading those, but they do exist for anyone that's that into Hilda. But yeah, it's very fun, very pretty. I don't know if pretty is the right word.
I think it's really
it's very
nice.
Visually interesting.
Yeah.
And creative. And I love the sort of bigger format of the graphic novel. It allows you to have like many more panels on a page, and it's not just like this size square, this size square, this size square. It's like, you know, where they're all the same. It's like some of them are little rectangles and some of them are triangles, or sometimes there's, you know, a big huge panel. So I like the way that he uses panels in storytelling. So that's that. Have any of you ever seen the show?
I saw commercials for it.
Yeah, she's pretty cool. Yeah, I would suggest the comics more than the show, but I think if parents are looking for a show that's fun for kids, that's got some adventure and fantasy, it's a fun one.
Yay.
Yeah.
Does anyone have anything that they're excited to read?
I'm still like slowly working my way through the 11th Plague.
Oh yeah.
I feel like I've been saying for like a year now that I'm going to read Splendors and Glooms eventually. But I still kind of want to read Splendors and Glooms eventually after a year.
Why not? I have books that have been like that. I think I've been talking about reading Old Man and the Sea for like 5 years.
Well, Old Man in the Sea is justifiable to put off.
But it's only like 100 pages, so there's really no excuse.
It's so bad.
How about you, Lena? Are you excited about reading anything?
I'm really excited about reading The Girl at Midnight, but I also am also really excited about something else that doesn't have to do with reading, but it isn't on my phone or anything else. So it's the place called Animal Kind. I really love going there because they have cats, and I don't have any pets, but they have animals there. And also, like, in a few seconds or minutes, I could just be there because I live close to that place.
Mm-hmm.
Animal Kind is so cute.
Yeah. I'm very
I went there earlier.
Glad they're
I always
here
go to
take
PetSmart
care
just
of
to look at the cats.
Animals.
I think the PetSmart employees don't like me very much because I always just go in there and look at the cats and leave.
Stare at them.
Yeah.
I think the employees like me very much because this whole time I was like looking at the cats but also being scared that they would scratch me. But they scratched my friend.
Oh no.
Which was very sad, and she started crying around the cats. But it's, like, super fun to go in there because I got to play with the cats, and there are some specific cats that I don't want them to get adopted, so I can take them.
When we got Patches, I think we got her from my mom's friend, who had an outside cat that ended up having kittens. Mm-hmm. And we ended up getting her declawed, because that was one of the necessities for my dad. That's actually illegal in New York now, but when we got her, it wasn't. And we ended up, like, I think really regretting it, because it took a while for her to recover, and her little paws
hurt. Poor Patches.
And I felt
bad. But she's happy now.
I felt really bad. Yeah, she's fine. She gets along fine. She can hit. Like, she can smack you, and it hurts, and that's weird for a cat to be able to do, but she will, like, smack you if you annoy her too much.
She's like, you took my claws, I smack you.
Yeah, she'll bite. She can still bite, and she still has her back claws, but she hits, which is weird, but, you know, however it works for her. She's okay now, but when we first got her declawed and she was walking around and had to keep, like, laying down and licking her paws, we felt really bad. Mm-hmm. We felt really, really bad.
Well, you've made up for it with lots of love. So
yeah, we love that cat.
So, Fahim, what are you excited to read or watch or do? Or
I guess nothing right now.
You're not excited about anything in life?
Not really.
Nothing?
I'm excited for the holidays.
Yeah, yes, that too.
Yeah, happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
I'll say I'm excited about the His Dark Materials series, which has just started. An HBO series. Well, I think it was a BBC series that's on HBO. I'm not sure exactly how the production worked, but it just started. It's based on a book series by Philip Pullman that I really loved back in the day. So I'm enjoying it so far. See where it goes.
Yeah, my parents are actually watching the Purge series right now, season 2 of it, which so far has not failed to impress me. It impresses me more than the latest movie had.
Cool. Well, anyways, we're about out of time for today. But we hope everyone has a great week with lots of quality reading time, or watching time, or cat petting time.
Yay.
Happy reading.
Bye.
Bye.
Give you my whole world. Welcome to the Public News Service Daily Newscast for November 14th, 2019. I'm Mary Sherman. Pundits are picking apart testimony from Wednesday's impeachment hearing as the inquiry into President Trump's dealings with Ukraine moves forward. At the first public impeachment hearing in 20 years, the senior U.S. diplomat in Ukraine, Bill Taylor, and a senior State Department official overseeing Ukraine policy, George Kent, testified. Taylor provided new evidence, stating that his staffer had overheard Trump asking the U.S. ambassador to the European Union about the investigations in a July phone call. However, Republicans pressed both witnesses about their lack of direct contact with Trump. The Trump campaign issued a statement dismissing the testimony as third-hand hearsay and ridiculing Kent and Taylor as unelected career government bureaucrats who think they know best. The next hearing is Friday and features testimony from Marie Yovanovitch, who was ousted from her post as a U.S. ambassador to Ukraine in May. A new report underscores the financial struggles plaguing college students after graduation, finding that nearly 25% of federal student loan borrowers default within 5 years of starting the repayment process.
Most of these borrowers showed signs of financial distress almost immediately when it came time to start repaying their student loan debt. Sarah Saddlemeyer manages the Pew Charitable Trust's Project on Student Borrower Success. She says the student loan system is outdated, confusingly complex, and often undermines borrowers' efforts to repay their debt.
Before they even enter repayment, some groups are more likely to struggle. For example, those who owe the least, and often less than $10,000, default at higher rates than those with higher balances.
The U.S. Department of Education reports that currently about 20% of student loan borrowers, that's more than 1 million people, are in default, and millions more are behind on their payments. I'm Nadia Ramlagan.
In other education news, teachers in the Little Rock School District are planning a one-day strike today after the State Board of Education effectively moved to decertify the teachers' union. Mark Richardson reports.
The 23,000 student district, the state's largest, has been under state control since 2015, when 8 of the district's 48 campuses received a grade of F from state regulators. At that point, the state board voted to remove Little Rock's elected school board and take over operation of the district. Little Rock Education Association President Teresa Knapp Gordon told a news conference they called a strike to force the state to return the district to local control.
As educators, we would rather be in a classroom with our students, not on a picket line. However, this community and the passionate, dedicated educators of this district will do what is necessary to protect the futures of our students.
School officials say a combination of administrators and substitute teachers will be used to keep the classrooms open.
This is PNS. Amid the continued debate over curbing the climate crisis, a new report examines the role of agriculture both as a source of greenhouse gas emissions and a political solution to capturing carbon. According to the findings from the National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition, the farming sector has increased its greenhouse gas emissions over the past few decades, and it says improved soil health and resource conservation practices can reduce or even neutralize farming's carbon footprint. Emily Lipstrew with the Ohio Ecological Food and Farm Association cautions that inaction will result in devastating consequences for people, agriculture, and the environment.
The climate crisis is a serious threat to our food security, the viability of farmers and ranchers, and our environment. Action on the recommendations in this report will facilitate the shift to a more sustainable agriculture system to address this challenge head on.
The report puts forward nearly 30 detailed public policy recommendations. Trade negotiations between the U.S. and China are running into trouble as the two countries attempt to finalize a limited trade agreement. According to reports, the U.S. is trying to secure stronger concessions from China to regulate intellectual property protections and to stop the practice of forced technology transfer in exchange for rolling back on some of the tariffs. However, China is reportedly apprehensive about committing to a specific amount of agricultural products in the deal. In the wake of recent reports of fatal lung illnesses connected with the use of e-cigarettes, new research seems to confirm concerns about the health impacts of vaping.
A study by Boston University researchers found that e-cigarettes altered cholesterol levels, and Dr. Florian Roder with the Smidt Heart Institute at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in Los Angeles says his group's research suggests that vaping may be more harmful to heart health than traditional cigarettes.
Our study adds to the evidence that e-cigarette smoking may not be quite as healthy as it's being portrayed, and I think this is reason enough for now to be at least cautious.
Rotter compared the blood flow of 10 non-smokers, 10 tobacco cigarette smokers, and 10 e-cigarette users. Testing blood flows at rest and while squeezing a hand grip, only e-cigarette users showed signs of coronary vascular dysfunction even when they were not exerting themselves physically. Industry groups have previously argued that vaping is a healthy alternative to traditional cigarettes, especially for people trying to kick their smoking habit. I'm Eric Galatis.
Facebook says it removed 3.2 billion fake accounts between April and September this year, along with millions of posts depicting child abuse and suicide. That's more than double the number of fake accounts taken down during the same period last year. There are concerns from law enforcement that Facebook's plans to provide greater privacy to users by encrypting the company's messaging services will hamper efforts to fight child abuse. I'm Mary Sherman for Public News Service, member and listener supported, and online at publicnewsservice.org.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant. Sarah Tapton is reporting for Columbia Green Media. Greene County officials have taken an option to purchase the building currently being used as a temporary sheriff's office in Coxsackie. The price tag is $400,000. The legislature approved in October an agreement to lease the space located at 370 Madison Street for a three-year period to provide a place for the county to process those charged and taken into custody. Greene County Administrator Sean Groden argues that buying the property would ultimately prove cheaper than renting. He communicated with legislators about the purchase option at the request of Coxsackie Representative Republican Charles Martinez. Groden said, and I quote, "If we acquire it now to save $125,000, we have to sell it for $400,000 in order to save the $125,000," end quote. Catskill Representative Matthew Lavera and Linda Overbaugh, both Republicans, expressed some concern about the county buying commercial property. Lavera said, and I quote, "Acquiring commercial property is a gamble," end quote. Overbaugh said the idea made her squeamish. Following the discussion, a resolution to move forward with the proposal was defeated by the Public Works Committee. However, an amended version of the same resolution could be brought before the Finance Committee on November 18th. And you can read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. Amanda Purcell is reporting for Columbia Green Media. The Hudson Common Council is examining a proposal to extend the terms for various elected positions. If approved, existing two-year terms would be expanded to 4 years effective January 1, 2022. For mayor, common council president, city treasurer, the five county supervisors, and 10 aldermen. The changes would then be subject to a public referendum on Election Day 2020. Majority Leader and Second Ward Alderwoman Tiffany Garriga spoke in favor of including council members in the proposal. She said at the council meeting, and I quote, "It gives us an opportunity to complete a task, so to speak," end quote. Some agreed with extending the mayor's term. City resident Patrick Malloy said, and I quote, "4 years, it takes 2 years to figure out what you are supposed to do," end quote. Some strongly opposed the idea of longer terms for elected officials. City resident Matt McGee said, and I quote, "The power of the people to vote for members of this chamber should not be curtailed," end quote. Fourth Ward Supervisor Linda Mussman urged the council to table the measure and allow for a larger public discussion. Mussman said, and I quote, "I have my doubts that this is a good idea. Holding public officials accountable every 2 years is perhaps the best idea for this moment in time," end quote. First Alderman Robert Bujon suggested adding staggered terms for council members on the proposal. An attempt was made to extend terms for the mayor and common council president a decade ago, but was ultimately rejected by the voters. And you can read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. The Daily Freeman is reporting Bard College was awarded a gold seal at the 2019 All-In Challenge Award Ceremony for its students' voting participation. The nonpartisan National Awards recognizes colleges and universities that are committed to increasing student voting rates.
Bard's student voting rate was between 40% and 49%. The voter registration rates for Bard College show 47.2% of students voted in 2018, while 82.5% of the students were registered and eligible to vote. Overall, student participation in elections has increased from the 2014 to 2018 midterm elections. According to the National Study of Learning, Voting and Engagement, voter turnout at more than 1,000 institutions participating in the study increased by 21 points, from 19% to 40%. And you can read the full story in the Daily Freeman. Patrick Connolly is reporting for the Buffalo Law Journal and Buffalo Business First. New York lawmakers are looking into a proposal to consolidate some of the state courts. The proposal was announced in September by Court of Appeals Chief Judge Janet DeFiore, who oversees New York's unified court system. The new structure would have three parts: town and village courts, as they are currently set up, municipal courts, which include city and district courts, and higher courts. Higher courts would include the current Supreme Court, county courts, family courts, surrogate courts, and the Court of Claims. Those courts would have six branches: criminal, claims, commercial, family, general, and probate. Lawmakers held the first legislative hearing on the proposal November 13th in Albany, with a second scheduled for November 21st. The changes proposed would require amendments to the state constitution. To become official, they would have to be approved by two consecutively elected state legislatures and then ratified by the voters. Read the full story at bizjournals.com. And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, visit our website, wgxc.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Graham. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
WGXC is interrupting normal broadcasting to bring you impeachment hearings live from Washington, D.C. Again, local programming is interrupted for impeachment hearings.
WGXC-FM will carry live coverage of the House Intelligence Committee's first open hearing as part of the impeachment inquiry into President Donald J. Trump on Friday, November 15th. On Friday, the committee will speak with former U.S. Ambassador to Ukraine, Marie Yovanovitch.
You can hear regular local programming at WGXC.org. Click on the Listen button and scroll down to the All Together Now web stream to hear live local programming while impeachment hearings are on 90.7 FM. That's wavefarm.org/listen. Scroll down for the All Together Now web stream to hear live local programming while impeachment hearings air on 90.7 at WGXC FM.
Please check the schedule at WGXC.org for additional details as they become available. Listen live by tuning in to 90.7 on your FM dial or at WGXC.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather. Cloudy today as temperatures start out at 21, then rise to 38 before dark. Midday, we will see wind gusts pick up, so it may feel colder as it deepens the wind chill. Overnight temperatures drop back to the upper 20s. Tomorrow will be sunny and warmer, reaching the upper 40s. Looking beyond the clouds, we see more artificial constellations due to SpaceX. Another 60 components of the Starlink Internet Network are ascending to their orbit of over 500 kilometers and are still viewable to the naked eye. Solar wind speed is currently 354 kilometers per second at 10.4 protons per milliliter. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 2, quiet, and there has been one day since the last sunspot. This has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
I'd say, do you say, I do, I'd say.
Okay. Okay. I'm going to move my mic around to hear parts of the engine. Where I'm about to put the mic is where all the valves are. It's noisy. It sounds like a sewing machine.
This is tongue and cheek. Exercises for warming up our way.